Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Man's World here on this Sunday evening, Sunday afternoon. And we're happy that we have at least two of our panelists on the board right now. Whoops.
Wow. Someone's got a radio on.
Yeah. Let me see if I can figure that one out. I got that one. So there's Bruce and Ron are on and ready to go with me. I'm sure the other panelists will pop in a minute here, but we're you know, ready to talk and ready to let you know what's going on. And once again, this is the Man's Sports. My name is David Shorter, and I would like to invite you to come in and tell us what thoughts are on your mind or what you would like the men to talk about. You can do that by dialing in at 646-668-8740 for those that are listening online and not the phones. Ron and Bruce, let us get going. I know that there was a lot going on
Putin. Everywhere. Putin.
Yeah, everywhere.
Everywhere.
I know. And there was some thoughts, here nationally about things that are going on. So Darius just popped in with this so we can have some conversation. So, Ron, how would you like to bring something to the table?
Thank you, David, for calling on me. And actually what I want to bring up is directly related to Putin the Russia invasion of Ukraine. And what I want to bring up, and I'm curious to find out, and I'm glad Darius joined, because I want to find out from my fellow Republicans on the panel, so both of you are on, or I think there might be one or two others, but Darius and Bruce are on. I'm very curious what you think about what's going on between Mike Pence, former Vice President Mike Pence, and his statements about Russia and Ukraine. Same thing with Florida Governor Ron DeSantis and Donald Trump. To me, it's kind of already shaping up to be a circus on the Republican side. You've got, from what I understand, and from what I saw this morning, you've got Mike Pence basically on the other end of the spectrum from Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis. Mike Pence says it's an invasion and we should help Ukraine as much as we can, as long as we can, is my interpretation from what I got from the news. And you've got on the other end, you've got Donald Trump and Ron DeSantis saying it's not an invasion, it's a territorial dispute, and we should not, of course, I'm paraphrasing, but we should not be wasting time on this. I see this as, look at it in the same light as the U.S. and Texas. If Mexico were to come back, and I don't want to pollute anybody's response, but if Mexico were to come back and say, well, we want Texas back, is that a territorial dispute or is it an invasion if Mexico, tries to do it by force? So my question to Bruce and Darius is, how do you feel about what's going on between the three of them? Where do you stand on the issue? And if the election were held today, if you had to pick today between Donald Trump, Pence, and Ron DeSantis, who would you vote for and why? Bruce?
You want to go first, Darius?
Darius?
No, okay, sure, sure. Since you sent it to me, I'll go first. Thank you so much, Ron, for valuing my opinion, man. I appreciate that. good to hear from you. I'm not too aware of Pence's comments, but I'll just go based on what you said. So what you have with Mike Pence is you have a someone who is more leaning toward more of the establishment Republican. So those days, I think, for the Republican Party are long gone. So we won't see any more George Bushes or Senator McCain at the presidential level anymore because Donald Trump has come in and paved the way. So whatever you can say about, you know, DeSantis and some of these other people, let's be perfectly clear. They would not exist had it not been for Donald Trump. Donald Trump created the appetite in the conservative movement for these conservative establishment conservatives who want to go along just to get along, who don't want to pull the cover off and drain the swamp in Washington. So Mike Pence only exists because he ran with Donald Trump. There's no way Mike Pence could have won any nationwide election without Donald Trump. In terms of Ukraine, I agree with Trump's version of it. I don't think we should be beholden to contribute to someone indefinitely, no matter what the situation is, especially they're not a NATO ally. Also, Ukraine is a very, very corrupt country. We've known this even before they got into a war with Russia. It just baffles me how people can say we're just going to support them indefinitely, no matter how long it takes, we're going to be there. I don't think that's where we need to be. And I'm with Donald Trump on our America First policy. Now, should we act in some form? Yeah. Should we contribute in some form? Absolutely. But I think it should be coming more from a diplomatic standpoint. We should be trying to bring these two countries to the table. But at the very least, we should not be giving them money without us at least auditing where these funds are going. And I also find it very weird that nobody at all is concerned about the fact that Joe Biden's family was getting money from Ukraine, you know, 15 years before this even happened. And the fact that we're going to give money to them without any kind of auditing, any kind of supervision, and indefinitely, when our banks are collapsing here in America, and we have inflation at an all-time high, our economy is on the brink of destruction, and we're going to continue to give money to Ukraine that we don't have. So at some point, you have to draw the line. So I'm with Donald Trump on that. I don't think that this should be something that we are going to be in for the next 20 years. And we're just digging ourselves a bigger hole financially and spreading ourselves thin on the world stage by doing this. I know that's a long answer, but I just totally disagree.
Yeah, Bruce, before you answer, Bruce, if I may, if it's okay with you, can I have a real quick follow-up of Darius?
Sure. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, Darius, do you see it as an invasion or as a territorial dispute? And if Russia were to take over parts or all of Ukraine, do you see that as a threat to democracy or no?
No, I don't see it as a threat to democracy simply because, like I said, Ukraine is not a NATO nation and Ukraine is a corrupt country. Now, it's definitely an invasion, but it could be skewed because, you know, Russia says, hey, back in the old Soviet Union, this was a part of ours. So I could see why someone would use that argument. But no, Russia has definitely invaded Ukraine. Ukraine has a right to protect its sovereignty. But at the same token, in our own sovereignty here in America, in terms of the southern border, and yet we're going to make sure that the Ukrainian border is stabilized. But I don't think if Russia took over Ukraine that that's going to mean anything at all to freedom around the world.
Okay. Sorry, Bruce. Your turn.
A lot of what Darius said, I would agree with. A little bit different slant. I see as this goes on, I see Russia, even though people are up and down as to how powerful, how weak, whatever, I see Russia using Ukraine as a move on the chessboard. And I don't mean that to be disrespectful, but I'm trying to think of how they're approaching this. They, meaning Russia, are trying to accomplish certain things, put themselves in a certain position, draw allies from a certain people, a.k.a. China, and others, to strengthen and bolden their position. And it unfortunately just so happens that Ukraine has become that. I would say that respectfully that Ukraine, even though, as Darius said, it's not a NATO nation, so if they're attacked, you can't use NATO as a let's go in and get them. But I got to believe if Trump was the president right now, he would find a way to accomplish a positive goal for America, USA first, in the way that this is affecting us, because it is. It's draining our resources, our materials, our attitude, our demeanor, and everything else you can think of. So I think Trump would also play in that chess game to accomplish another goal, and that would be to back Russia down, to entice others, even though they may not be NATO nations, you guys, meaning other countries in Europe, you pony up, because the U.S. isn't going to do it all here. And I also agree that that would facilitate a limited or a smaller investment of our time, money, talents, everything else. Doesn't change our influence, but one of the best people, I think, in creating and delivering that influence in a way that's best helps us as well, and probably Ukraine to some degree, is Donald. You can disagree with a lot of his approaches and things like that. We won't get into that. But as that chess player on that board, he is the best one of the ones we're talking about right now to make that happen. And his unpredictability scares the you-know-what out of a lot of countries over there. So when he snaps his fingers or says, you need to pony up, they start doing it. We've already seen that happen. So I think the battle between Russia and Ukraine, Russia is using it to position themselves, and we have to have a strong enough administration here to back him down or push him back. And I'm worried of that right now, that we're not doing that.
So my follow-up to you is, you said twice, actually, to make Russia back down. How do you think we could do that?
Well, I think if we, as a short burst, figured out what could be the most critical things to give Ukraine in a much shorter period of time to push them back. And I don't profess to know what that is, what materials, what equipment, what other things. But I think he would act more decisively, more quickly, and get Russia to quickly understand that, you know who you're playing with now. And if you do this, we're going to do that. And if you don't do this, then we will, kind of thing. So right now, we don't have the credibility, I don't think, not enough of it, that people believe we're going to do anything. And those three or four examples, the balloon, the drone, a number of other things where we're just saying, oh, it might have been a mistake. We don't need to, make waves. I agree we should not just run in and be, bulls in a china shop. But this approach of, oh, don't worry, everything's okay. It's not okay. You know that, Ron. We all know that. So I think that's the way it should be played out.
But do you see the U.S. position as a very delicate balancing act between doing what we're doing or maybe causing a full-blown third world war?
No, I see it as right now, unfortunately, it could turn into something bigger that none of us want if the wrong move is made or the wrong button is pushed or the wrong people are sent. But I see it as a delicate balancing act still, and everybody's kind of wondering, you know, who's gonna end up on top and who's gonna kind of be the forceful one to control this. Right now, I don't think from the standpoint of all those involved, there's a competent leader involved in this either three-way triangle between Ukraine, Russia, and the U.S., or even a multifaceted way. I don't think anybody's really taking hold and leading the way and getting this to a resolution. And it scares me when I hear some of our own, both Republican and Democrat, say, well, we'll stay there as long as it takes, and how many years, months, whatever. That scares the bejeebers out of the United States citizens.
And here's a question to both you and Darius or whoever else is on that wants to answer any of the questions. What do you think would happen if the NATO countries, including the U.S., of course, had a war against Russia/China? I guess India would be on their side, too. I don't know that for a fact, but what do you think would happen?
I'll give you a quick answer, not my verbose one, and then I'll shut up. If that happens, Ron, we have a bigger, faster chance of getting into a very severe war, albeit World War III or some kind of very serious war that we're not in right now.
I agree with Bruce, but I'm going to tell you this, Ron. The likelihood of people keep talking about a third world war, I don't know, maybe I'm over-optimistic, but the likelihood of that happening nowadays is a little far-fetched because, you know, back when we had the other world wars, all of these nations were pretty much self-sufficient or self-reliant. We live in a world now where we're all interconnected, where we have global markets. So it's hard for one country to do something to another without self-infliction of some sort of retribution or some sort of retaliation.
Great.
So if China attacks America, it hurts their economy immediately.
Great point.
If Russia attacks any of the NATO allies, I mean, where are they going to get their money from? Their chief exporters are the European nations, the nations of NATO. So I just don't see it being as likely as it once was in the past. Like, we all are interconnected commercially and in terms of our economy, where we support and depend on one another. So I was telling Bruce this. I think we talked about this a while ago, too. There's no reason for China to attack America. America is giving China everything it wants. China is getting our intellectual property. They're stealing all of our intellectual property and selling it back to us. Our entertainment industry is kowtowing to China's propaganda. They're letting them control the narrative around the world. They're embedded in our schools, our universities, and our higher learning institutions, where they control the narrative there. And they're getting rich based on our debt and our consumption. So it would be a total loss for China to attack us when they already have everything they need from a functioning America right now. I mean, Joe Biden just let a spy plane fly across our whole country and did absolutely nothing until it went across. Russia hacked our pipeline, last year? Our power line and shut off our oil. We didn't do anything. We didn't retaliate. There's no reason for these countries to attack America now. If we get another strong president in there like we had with Trump, who's willing to impose tariffs and willing to say you're not going to take advantage of us anymore, then that might lead to one. But right now, they're sitting in the driver's seat. So there's no need for a world war.
And Ron, one last thing. I heard an interesting thing on the news yesterday. We could bring Russia to a significant position close to on their knees very quickly. without any of this war talk. And this wasn't my idea. I heard it from someone else. We ramp up, become not only energy independent, but energy dominant in the world, which we have the resources and the capabilities to do. We strangle Russia's high inflated prices they're getting from all their people they're selling their petroleum to, which is fueling, no pun intended, everything they're doing. And they go basically bankrupt as far as to some degree, as far as being able to finance what they're doing right now. And I thought that was an interesting concept, that bringing Russia to a uncle, leave me alone kind of position without firing a shot.
Yeah, that's
Bruce,
a whole other topic.
What's that?
It is.
Sorry,
guys. You remember when Donald Trump went to Germany and told Germany this? He's like, you guys are not going to have the pipeline deal with Russia. We're going to provide you with your oil,
and
you're going to strangle Russia. And had we done that then, Russia would not have the power that they have right now to invade Ukraine. And they wouldn't have the finances either.
All right, gentlemen, let me ask Don, do you have any points on these issues?
Thank you, David. Thank you very much. And I've been sitting back listening, and I think you guys covered it very well. We're in a very difficult situation being here in the United States of America. I think that if Biden had not reacted the way he did in Afghanistan, would not have done what he did, because he would have depicted a stronger force opposed to weakness. It exposed the weakness, and I've heard you talk about that many times, Terrence, and you're absolutely right. Us giving them a blank check and saying that we're going to support them regardless is a detriment for the United States, because we're going through some terrible economic situations right now. We're going to face an economic crisis in America to the point of 08 if we don't get this thing fixed right away. I think with the resurgence of the Republican Party positioning themselves to be strong with Donald Trump and DeSantis, that's going to be a very interesting race. Very interesting. That's going to be the showdown of showdowns. I don't think Pence will even be a factor. He is trying to usurp the power and the alliance of Donald Trump by cowing down and trying to be all things to all people. That won't work. But we're going to see the Trump and Santa showdown within the next year. It's going to be kind of difficult for Trump, because the legal issues that he's facing next week and the other three other issues that he's facing legally are going to keep him occupied. And that's going to be very interesting. We're going to face another exciting 2 years coming up, starting next year. Well, latter part of this year, I should say, here in America. But first of all, I want to say we need to be focused on taking care of home first. We need to take care of home bad, gentlemen. I'm concerned about the economics in America right now.
All right. Okay. Let's move on around the table. Bruce, do you have something you want to bring to the table?
I don't think we got into this a couple weeks ago, so I would like to now get the take of all you fine brothers, panelists, your opinion on the difference of definition. And those two words are equality versus equity. I will wait to see what you have to say, or if you browbeat me into it, I'll give mine first. But I would very much like to hear what each one of you, with your background and your expertise and your life experience, what do you see as the definition or the difference between equality and equity? And Mr. Don, I'd like you to go first.
Very good. Thank you very much, Bruce. Let's start with diversity first.
No. If I said that, I misspoke myself. Equality versus equity, not diversity.
Well, I guess I'm so used to saying diversity, equity, and inclusion. That's why I said
Okay.
But you want to take the first one out?
Go ahead.
No. I'm asking you. You want me to take diversity out?
Just equality versus equity.
Okay.
Those two words.
Equality.
Okay.
Let's talk about equality, Bruce.
All right.
If we were to look at equality, we're looking at an uneven playing field for years, over 400 years. We're looking at an uneven playing field on a lot of levels. You can look at the Caucasian America, and they say, well, I didn't have anything to do with what my grandfather did, but they're reaping the benefits of their actions. So the equality has never been even from the very beginning. And there's been many tips to get equal, but I don't think it will ever happen. They always talk about the 40 acres and a mule. I don't think black people will ever get 40 acres and a mule. Or how do you make it even? How do you get equity? By trying to start somewhere. And that's what we're saying. Let's start somewhere. Let's try to make it equitable for all nations, all nationalities, Hispanic, white, black, all LGBT, all areas that have been left out, and it's not been an equal playing field where the white male has dominated in male corporations from day one. Equity, inclusion. Now, there needs to be an even playing field and inclusion. There are some people that have been systematically left out. The good old boy network. You know, it's me and my four and no more. So it's all about trying to even the playing field. That's what we're saying. And I heard someone say the reason why these banks are going through what they're going through now financially is because they have tried to even the playing field through diversity, equity, and inclusion. That's not true. We got to try to even the playing field some way, somehow. And where do you start? We got to get started somewhere.
Don?
Yes, sir.
I got muted. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, okay. What's wrong with evening the playing field like we started from the beginning, although we can debate whether it's a perfect start or not? Even the playing field by even the opportunity of accomplishing something. We have people in every race, color, creed, and nationality that have excelled in their lives, some much greater than me or you or others, and some much less. But doesn't the basis of evening the playing field, to use your terminology there, should be evening the opportunity and working towards that goal so you can excel? Because if we gave everybody, if it all dissolved down into financial, and we gave everybody a certain amount of money, and everybody started with the same, equality of opportunity would have people right back again excelling to a greater degree, because it's in their DNA, so to speak, to want to achieve or overachieve or whatever terminology. So why couldn't evening the field be equal opportunity for all of us to start?
That would be well and good in an even playing field, Bruce, but there's never been an even playing field. And I don't know if you recognize it, but racism has never been dealt with. It's never been dealt with, Bruce. And we're going to always have to deal with that. Don't fool yourself. I'm not going to fool myself. It exists. It's real.
I don't think anybody would say that.
I can add just a little bit to what Don said, if I may, Bruce.
Yeah, go ahead.
To me, and you know, I'm coming at it obviously from a different perspective, but I end in the same place that Don did. And Don, I'm 100% in agreement with everything you said. From my perspective, I'll just say one statement that'll leave you probably scratching your head. Do you realize that in Florida, any corporation, or maybe not any, but a private corporation can fire a person just because they're gay? That's not an even playing field.
That's not right, in
my opinion. Huh?
No, it's not.
Right. So to me, equality is being treated equally, and that is definitely not equality. And to me, equity is being free from bias or prejudice or favoritism, which we really don't have either. That's why there's so much of an emphasis now on DEAI, which, by the way, our governor is trying to get away from and defunding all of these programs and all of the public schools across the state, which to me makes no sense.
One thing, though,
can I jump in for a second? Because to me, the term equity refers to fairness and justice, and it's distinguished from equality, whereas equality means providing the same to all, whereas equity means recognizing that we do not all start from the same place and must acknowledge and make adjustments to the imbalance. So I think the two words actually have different, totally different meanings.
But David, you make a good point, but does that mean then we have to, you know, in this country, your level of success, whether you like it or not, and I don't totally agree with it, is measured on the measuring stick is how much money you make in your lifetime. We are a money society as the major component that defines success. Don't agree with that, but that's kind of where it is. So if what you said is true, again, does that, that if you don't relate that to how much money you start with, but we're able to say whether you're any color. In other words, when you apply for a job, you won't know anybody's race or anything. You'll just see their talent, their pros, and so forth. And you hire someone. I'm simplifying this a little bit. You just hire based on what you see on that paper. But in our country, we emphasize too much. Well, for me to catch up, you got to give me more money. Well, there are extremely successful people money-wise in all the creeds, colors, races, and so on and so forth. So does that mean that if you're more successful than I am, David, or Michael is, or Darius is, or so forth, you guys are going to give me money to start? I don't even think that's right. I do agree with you that it should be, without the dollar value in there, your ability to not be hindered by what you can do to make a success of your life. And you'll determine what that is, what position, what role, what influence, and how much money you make based on that opportunity.
Let me, Bruce, ask you a question.
Yes.
I want you to think about this before you answer it, okay? When you think about the plight that blacks have faced over the past 400 years, going through what they have gone through and helping to build this country, and also never been given the opportunity through racism to compete, through slavery and other things that happened prior to you coming to Earth. Was that fair? And I know that you're going to say, no, that wasn't fair, but you're reaping the benefits of your forefathers right now. How do you make that up to that group of people?
Well, and Don, you're reaping the benefits of our forefathers and the people before us also. And so are and a lot of other people based on your skills and abilities. There are so many people. I'm not saying what you're saying, as you said, it is a true statement. They were not treated in many ways like human beings or properly treated as people, and therefore have lost a lot of opportunities then. But you keep going back then my question back to you was, how do we make this good? How do we make this even? Do you get, as they say out in California, all houses for a dollar, you get $500,000 from the government? I mean, that's not the proper answer either. So that's what I'm struggling with. I think you and I agree on a lot of things, but we just don't agree on how you get there. You're a successful man. In many ways, probably a lot more successful than I am. I feel successful. Others do as well in their own right. So is that equality? Once you're able to achieve that, opening up the doors for the ones that are really have been slammed in their face, I agree with that. Those doors should not be closed and locked. They should be open. But beyond that, it's up to your ability after that door is open.
Well, that's why we are dealing right now with diversity, equity, and inclusion. And to start somewhere, I think that's a great way to start. And listen, number one, listen like we're doing now. Listen, learn, and then lead. See, your race can really take the lead right now when it comes to what we're talking about. When you see your race take the lead, it's going to send a message to the world and to other nationalities from all parts of the world. So listen, learn, and lead with diversity,
hey,
equity, and inclusion. And then, like Ron said, let's include the LGBT, because I know some people have gotten fired because they were gay. In the broadcast field, I got a friend of mine, he and I are very close, fired him because he openly came out and said he was gay. That was stupid, and he was so talented.
Wouldn't it be interesting, Don, if in applications now we could literally take out what race and nationality or what race you are, that seems to be the biggest thing, and just expound on you who you are and the talents you have to contribute to the position you're going after. Wouldn't that be interesting? I know it's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen, Bruce.
That's the biggest. That would be one of the simplest, easiest, fastest ways, in my mind, giving people
100%,
the ability
Bruce,
to excel.
Yeah, Bruce, yeah. A question for you. Do you think DeSantis should be getting rid of diversity, equity, and inclusion programs across the state in universities?
I think he should be getting rid of, as I understand it, I won't answer it the way you said it because I don't believe it's that way. Should he get rid of things that are inappropriate at certain ages and certain times in their lives? Yes. Should he totally eliminate it? No. And he's not doing that. He wants to educate us, all of us, on all the appropriate history that's out there, good, the bad, and the ugly. And I agree with that.
No, you're getting the abbreviated version, because I have friends that work in the university system, and they're telling me what's happening with their deans and colleagues and professors that work with the EAI groups, and they're scared right now.
You even have DeSantis talking about getting rid of the fraternities and sororities in the college, Bruce. And those sororities and fraternities are there for a reason.
What do you think the reason is now? I know when I was there, they were there. You're right. They were there for a reason. What do you think the reason is now as a general statement?
Well, the different ones that are in the black community, they couldn't associate. They needed someone to talk to in the colleges. The alphas and so forth, they needed people to talk to. Bruce, they couldn't talk to people. Come on.
Don't make it sound like I'm disagreeing. I don't have a problem with what you just said. I just asked you. You didn't have to defend a position. I just asked you what was your impression of what they were for. You gave me, on the black community, it was a way for them to socialize, feel comfortable. I don't have a problem with that. That's what fraternities and sororities do. And that, when I went to school, they did that. But what have they become now? And that's what worries me is they're not what they were originally intended to be. And they're becoming another vehicle for stuff just to stir up, in some cases, I'm not generalizing, trouble versus being what you just said they should be. I agree with you on that.
Good trouble.
Is it my turn, guys?
Yes, jump in.
Come on in.
Here he is. Go ahead.
Okay, so thank you. So equity and equality, right? So I had the opportunity to talk to someone who's, I guess you would call them a member or a subscriber to the woke movement. And the way they described equity was our forefathers contributed to the building of this country, so therefore we are entitled to a portion of the wealth of this country. The problem I have with that is how do you know, unless you can do a direct trace to who your forefathers were, how do you know what they built and how much you are entitled to? America can't, you can't say I'm entitled to everything that America did because only a small portion of America owned slaves. I mean, it's probably less than 9 states, I think, that actually own slaves. So are you going to say the entire country was built on the back of slavery, which is a false statement? So equity means I put something in, I work hard, I contributed, therefore I am entitled to a portion of to reap the benefits of whatever that brings. That's not what they're talking about in their terms of equity. They're saying, oh, we should get something just because you have it and you got it because of your privilege. And they don't have to qualify that statement. They can just look at your skin color and say, Bruce, you're a white, middle-aged male, Christian male, heterosexual male, and you have money and I don't, so I'm entitled to a portion of it. That's not equity. And the way we're using that word is totally wrong in this debate that's going on in America today. Now, equality. What we're doing is we're confusing equality with fairness. You're not promised anything to be fair in this country. Equality, we already have equality, and all equality says is I have the same opportunities as you do, not necessarily because I'm white or because of my merit, but because of the color of my skin, which is absolutely true. I think I heard Don or somebody say good old boys club. Well, guess what? You have an opportunity to form a good old boys club too. Nepotism is not racism. Cronyism is not racism. If I have a position open at my firm and David comes to apply for that job, and someone else off the street comes to apply for that job, they might even be slightly more qualified than David. But guess what? David is my friend. He's my brother. He's my acquaintance. So he may get that job. Is that fair? May not be fair. But is that equality? Yeah, because it didn't happen because one person was black and one person wasn't. Equality just says that there's an even playing field, guys, and we all have an even playing field. we're confusing the fact when somebody was born to a rich family and somebody was born to a poor family as not being equal. That's not what equality was meant. In the genius of our founding fathers who were divinely inspired, equality happens in a market that creates that. That's why we have this thing called capitalism. Capitalism creates an equal playing field for everybody. That's, you cannot discriminate against someone here in America based on the color of their skin. Now, way back before the civil rights movement came, way back in the early 1800s, guys, America had black millionaires. There were black millionaires. There were blacks that founded schools and hospitals and schools for training doctors and nurses and dentists. Black people had wealth before there was a civil rights movement bill. They had wealth because of the country, the capitalist society that this country was founded on. We have equality now, guys. And us saying that we don't is pushing us backwards. And that's why I'm against the DEI. This is where this all ties into DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, because all that does is teaches people that you're disadvantaged because of the color of your skin and you're privileged because of the color of your skin. It does not say anything about merit. It does not say anything about the content of character. And DEI is going to be the detriment and the downfall of the United States capitalist system. Some people even say that if these banks weren't so focused on DEI and focused on the bottom line, which is red, being in the red or being in the black, that these banks would not have failed. In terms of the LGBTQ community, if you guys know somebody that got fired for being gay, you need to direct them to a civil rights attorney because that is against the law. Even in Florida, it was Title 54, and I know it is. It is. I'm getting ready to tell you, Ron. It is. Let me tell you what happened. Someone wanted to add a separate bill in Florida that says that people cannot be discriminated against or fired because they're gay, and Florida legislature said it's already in there. We're not going to set aside a special law for the LGBTQ community because the law says you cannot discriminate against any minority. And so that includes them as well. So if anybody got fired because of that, they have not only a state law in Florida, but there's a federal law against that as well. So if we get out there, if we work our butt on, if you create a product, a service, or a good, or if you have a skill that's a high skill set, you can be successful in America regardless of the color of your skin. So let's stop saying we don't have equality. We do. But do we have complete and total fairness? That will never happen because we don't live in a world that's fair.
All right. Anybody have any issues with that? No. Okay. Let's move on. Jeremiah, did you have something you wanted to bring to the table?
Not at this time, but I'm pretty sure Darius dropped the mic on that one.
No, he didn't, because I just looked it up, and I don't want to take everybody's time on this, but I just looked it up and on the Internet, and it is legal to be fired for being gay in Florida.
All right.
I'll send it to you, Darius.
Yeah, I have to disagree with you on that one, because I looked it up too, Ron, but I'll appreciate it. I'll read it.
Okay.
All right. So let's move on. Don, was there something you wanted to bring to the table?
I think we covered it. We talked about diversity, equity, and inclusion, and that was quite an interesting topic. And I know a lot of people that have been appointed to those offices in major corporations, and it's nothing but a force. It's nothing but a title. There are no funds attached to it. It's nothing but a title. It'll be a thing of the fad. It'll be a fad that will be talked about, and we won't be talking about this maybe a year from now.
All right. I had a memo just came in from one of our listeners, and they want to ask the table a question. do the gentlemen around the table feel that in American history, that American history should be taught to elementary, middle school, and high school students about the plight of Native Americans, the plight on Asian Americans, and the plight of African Americans? And do you think that young kids should get this told in American history? And then the thing was, don't you think that this would affect the young kids to believe that they are responsible? What are your thoughts on that one, Darius?
I kind of didn't get the gist of the question, David. You're saying, what about the Native Americans again and the Asian Americans?
Should American history that is taught to elementary students, junior high students, and high students, should this be part of the American history book that they get that tells you that the Native Americans were taken away from the country, Asian Americans were basically slaves, as well as African Americans? Do you think that all should be taught? Because the bottom line was, don't you think that young kids would feel bad about us teaching history like that?
Right, I get it. Yeah, as far as I understand, it's already being taught. I mean, I learned about the Asian Americans and the Chinese that were in servitude or slaves on the railroad movement and building up the railroad connecting the East to the West. I learned in school about African Americans and blacks being slaves. I learned in school about the Native Americans, you know, being pushed off of their land and pushed on the reservations. I learned about the Japanese internment camps. So I'm not familiar with what this person is saying, but what I will say is the way the country is moving now is a lot of the academia, the woke academia, is wanting to talk about that, but also not wanting to talk about the greatness of America. And I think what we need is more of a balance. Like, if you're going to talk about slavery, for instance, which is really big now in the woke movement, if you're going to talk about slavery and white people enslaving blacks, then you have to talk. You should talk about the blacks that sold the slaves to the white people. Then you have to talk about the white people.
I'm asking. You're taking it to a whole different phase. You're saying is
really?
Like,
no, I mean, where is this going? Man.
No, he's not. Let him go.
Listen, let me finish. Let me finish. I'm saying we should discuss all of this, David, but we can't be one-sided. It needs to be all-inclusive.
I'm not talking about the history of Africa and Africans who sold the slaves. I'm talking about American history. When they got here.
I am talking about America. Okay, when they got here, then it was white. Okay, so then we got to look at the white abolitionists that went to war, that fought to abolish slavery. Slavery could not have been abolished without white people. So, well, all I'm saying is you're right, David. We should teach all these things.
All around something else. I wish you would stay in the grade and listen to what I'm saying. Anyway, let's move on.
I thought I was. I thought I was. I'm sorry. I apologize, man.
Okay, what are your thoughts on that, Ron? Ron, are you there?
I'm sorry. I wasn't following that at all, David.
Okay, Jeremiah, what are your thoughts?
Kind of lost the question listening to Darius a little bit there.
I didn't. Can I jump in?
Sure.
I'd like to jump in, too.
Yes.
All right. What Darius, and tell me if I'm wrong, was trying to say, and I agree with what I think he was trying to say, is we have to show the appropriate, we have to show the whole story of history. It's very convenient today to paint everything black, no pun intended, everything dire, everything bad, everything this, everything that. It needs to be all aspects of it. And I think he used the word balance, or at least be able to show, well, this happened and this was not good. And you need to know that this was not good. This was cruel. This was not right. But this also happened too. That all of those pieces are a part of our history. And I got the feeling, David, tell me if I'm wrong, that you said she was off focus because you wanted to just talk about the negative. That's the way it came across. That's not what you meant, was it?
That is not what I meant, and you got it wrong also. What I was saying is, what I wanted to talk about is American history, which the person that is asking us to talk about is an American history that is taught to young kids and things. Shouldn't it be what they're teaching now, the positive, shouldn't it also be open to everything that has happened in American history that's not in the books? What's not in the books is Native American history. Basically, it's not in the young elementary school. They just, American history does not have that in it. Slavery, that's not in the book. Asian is not in the book for elementary, junior high school kids, according to...
No, as Darius said, we're going backwards, because I agree with him. I learned all that when I was in grade school. All of what you said isn't there now. I was taught in grade school.
Since civil rights, history has changed.
Now, David, what you were talking about was very realistic. A lot of people have not learned what you were talking about in school. A lot
right.
of people have not learned it. And I agree with you, David, 100%. And another thing, all of those different nationalities like the Chinese, the Japanese, the Native Americans, they were compensated financially for what we did to them back in those days. What happened to that? As far as history, I was never taught that. There are a lot of things that need to be taught. I think the whole story needs to be told. You can't pick and choose what you want to teach. The facts
That's all I was trying to say, Don. That's what I was saying, Don. That's all I was saying. Teach the whole thing.
What does woke mean to you, Darius? What does woke mean?
Woke is telling our society, our young people, that you have to wake up and realize that there is a systemic government or systemic society that's against you. And if you don't open your eyes, you will not be successful, because you cannot make it in this country. And you need to look and find the prejudice. You need to look and find the racism. You need to look and find the oppression, and how one party, because of one person, because of the color of their skin, is the oppressor and the other is the victim. And that is a very unbalanced, unhealthy, and I'll say religion, because that's what it is now. It's a religion, perpetrate a fraud like that on the youth of America. It's hopeless.
Now, me being African-American and black, would I be right to say that I've been thinking that all my life based on what you just said?
A lot of people do, but it's an unhealthy form of thinking, because how does that inspire and encourage a kid who's 9 years old, 10 years old, to tell them the world is against you, you will not succeed, you cannot make it, because white people want to see you fail? What does that tell them about their country? What does that tell them about their future? How can they be optimistic when you're giving them that at such a young age? It's not beneficial at all.
No.
It's not what you say. It could be how you say it, though, Darius.
Yeah, you got to see, our current governor is promoting the woke generation. Darius, come on. I mean, he says woke is what I'm talking about.
How is he promoting the woke generation when the extreme left Democrats are all about wokeism? They're your flag carrying waivers of wokeism.
Well, let's explain what woke is. I think we need to clarify what that is first. We don't have time right now, but
yeah,
let's do that.
Go.
Go ahead, Don.
Go, Don.
No. I want to hear what everybody thinks woke is, because, man, I tell you, there's a lot of thinking and thoughts on the word woke.
I'll give you my quick, only a few words. Woke has become now, however you want to explain it, a divisive instrument, dividing us and not making us work together. And that's wrong. Disagree.
I'm sorry, but we have to end right now. We want to thank everyone for listening. We'll be back again next Sunday at 6 o'clock. So tune in to the man's voice. Call in and give us a
stay woke.
Yes.
And it was
bye, guys.
Jeremiah, by the way. Totally disagree.
Have a
all right.
That's great, right, guys. Jeremiah.
Education is paramount.
Remember that.
Stay woke till next week.
Education is paramount.
God bless. God bless everyone.
Go Kings, baby.
Everybody has a shot in this country.